This is Faith in Action, the program that looks at how people put their faith into action in their everyday lives. Faith in Action is a production of Catholic Radio Indy. Now here's today's program.
This is Faith in Action on Catholic Radio. I'm Jim Ganley. Our co-host is Bridget Ayer.
Hello. Great to be with you.
And Bridget, we've already thanked people a bunch of times for our successful Share-a-thon, but boy, we just can't say it often enough for everybody who stepped up to the plate and became a donor during the Share-a-thon. Thank you very much. And of course, to all of our regular donors who have been giving all along, thank you as well. And also a big thank you to all of our volunteers who came in, answered the phone, made the coffee, and all of the other things.
Good that, food.
Absolutely.
That's the best part, I think.
All of the other things that are necessary to make a Share-a-thon. So again, thank you to everybody for that. Also want to just point out, Friday evenings, special time for Catholics.
Mm-hmm.
It probably means a fish fry at your parish,
mm-hmm.
followed by Stations of the Cross.
Yes.
If your parish has a fish fry and Stations of the Cross, or even just Stations of the Cross, by all means, go. Go. It's what you ought to do. If that time doesn't work out for you, here on Catholic Radio, this is the first year we've done this, at 7 o'clock on Friday evenings, we've got a presentation of the Stations of Cross that's absolutely beautiful. It's got singing, got music, got very thoughtful meditations for each of the stations. Make it a point to listen. 7 o'clock Friday evenings here on Catholic Radio during Lent. If you listen in and have some comment that you'd like to make about it, by all means, call us and tell us that you like it, didn't like it, whatever. We'd love to hear from you. So Friday evening, Stations of the Cross, here at Catholic Radio. Go to your parish if you can. If that doesn't work for you, Catholic Radio, 7 o'clock Friday.
Well, Stations of the Cross, you know, when I think about that, I think about, you know, a lot of suffering. And we're going to be kind of talking about a suffering topic, I guess, and that is domestic violence. And it is an unpleasant topic to talk about, but it's a necessary topic to address. And Carolyn Fisher, a nurse from the Center of Hope, is our guest to talk about this topic of domestic violence and sexual assault. So welcome to Faith in Action.
Thank you for letting me be here.
Well, I think a lot of people have an idea of what domestic violence might be. Everyone has their own kind of image of what that is. But what does that mean? Could you help define it for us? And then maybe tell us who is affected by that?
First of all, it's a very hidden thing.
So okay.
The average individual doesn't necessarily know that it's going on in
okay.
your neighbor's home or your friend's home. Domestic violence or interpersonal violence, or we also say intimate partner violence, so there's lots of acronyms that get thrown around, can be emotional, physical, sexual, financial. It's about power and control over another person. So anytime someone takes power in any of those ways over another individual, and the person that they're taking that power over feels victimized, it's violence.
Okay, so then who does it affect? I mean, is there, and maybe what's the scope of the problem, I guess? Maybe let's talk about maybe nationally or even just in our Indianapolis metro area.
Well, nationally, every minute about 20 women are victims of domestic violence in our country.
Say that again?
Every minute about 20 people, mostly women, are victims of domestic violence in our country. One out of four women, about one out of seven men throughout the course of their lifetime will be victimized at the hands of an intimate partner.
That's a lot higher than what I thought.
It is a bigger problem than people understand.
Now, does most of that occur with someone that the person is very familiar with? I mean, a family member or acquaintance?
Right. So we currently are using the term intimate partner violence. So it's someone that individual is in an intimate relationship with. But it can be like your parent or a child, as well as people who are intimate physically with each other.
Okay, so it could be boyfriend, girlfriend type, or it could be marriage, or it could just be like partners. I mean, there's so many terms these days.
Right.
But you're using it as intimate partners. It could be parent, child.
Yes.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about the mission of the Center of Hope. Give us an overview of the ministry or the organization that you work with. It's with the Franciscan Alliance, right?
Right.
Okay. So talk about the Center of Hope.
So we are a team of forensic nurses that take care of victims of sexual assault. That's how we started.
Okay.
And it became glaringly apparent that our skill set could also address the needs of victims of domestic violence. And often our sexual assault victims are also victims of their partner, right? So we've
been... Of domestic violence, right?
Right.
Okay,
right.
Gotcha.
So as a matter of fact, the first person that I ever testified in court on was a victim of sexual assault at the hands of her soon-to-be ex-husband.
Okay. We're talking with Caroline Fisher, and she is a nurse with the Center of Hope. And what do you do? I mean, how do you help those who are victims of domestic violence?
So our goals are to treat the medical, emotional, and legal needs of victims of violence.
Okay.
So we have a big sign in our center that says, healing begins here.
Wow. And you handle the legal as well?
Well, we go to court and testify about what we see when we're taking care of victims. So if I have a patient that comes in, for example, that was strangled and I see red marks on her neck, I can talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
I can talk about what that means in court.
And that changes the picture in court from a he said, she said type of situation.
Right.
So now, how did you get involved in this ministry, and how long is this? I don't know if it's a ministry or an organization, how you would classify that, but...
Yes. I would classify it as yes.
Both, right? Okay. So how did you get involved, and how long has the Center of Hope been around?
I got frustrated with an attitude of a physician towards a sexual assault victim.
Mm.
And this was all pre-internet days. So
sure. Mm-hmm.
Slowly but surely, I had heard about nurses that were doing this on the coasts.
Mm-hmm.
And slowly but surely, figured that out. St. Vincent's Hospital and, at the time, Wishard
mm-hmm.
had programs like this. And I went back to my boss and said, we've got to do this.
So how long ago was that? So
that
how
was
long?
Well, we opened our program in 1997.
Okay, so how was that? 25?
Almost 23 years.
Okay, wow, that's a long time. So now, do you have a physical location? And how do people learn about you, or how do you get connected with clients, I guess, or people that need help? What's the like the pathway, I guess?
So we get referrals from law enforcement when a victim reports to law enforcement. People just walk in through the emergency department and say, I've been sexually assaulted, or my partner hit me, or whatever. I go to all kinds of community health fairs and so on, trying to make people aware of the program. But we are a room specially dedicated to victims of sexual assault in our Indianapolis campus.
Okay.
And then because the dynamics are so different with domestic violence, those victims, we go out to the department and see those folks.
Uh-huh.
It's a little different way of caring for people than the way we care for sexual assault victims.
So now, do people that are in a domestic violence situation, do you have a place there, like with us at the Center of Hope, for people to be housed? Or can you kind of walk us through, like, how you serve someone?
Sure.
You know what I mean? Just so if someone was listening and maybe they knew somebody else, just kind of like what's involved.
Well, so I just go in and introduce myself and share with them that I can help them by doing documentation about what happened to them, get their permission to do that.
So you meet with them maybe at their house, or do they come
to
you?
No, they come to the emergency department.
Okay.
So I go into their room in the emergency department.
Oh, gotcha.
And introduce myself, say what I can do. We work with advocacy agencies in the community. And I ask them if it's okay to call an advocate in to come be with them as well. I can't be their advocate after they leave the hospital
mm-hmm.
because of the potential of going to court.
Okay.
So an advocate is someone that can kind of be, I tell the patients, it's like giving you a new best friend for a while.
Mm-hmm.
They can help explain the legal system to you, why things are happening, why they're not happening, why isn't the police officer calling me. And
it's
then be that liaison.
It's very complicated, too, on top of being a very stressful situation. How do people get into this situation of, you know, domestic abuse?
Well, that's a good question, because
signs
up for this, right?
Yeah, right, exactly.
So the problem is that folks that are abusers are very, very skilled at presenting different personas.
Mm.
So you meet Mr. Perfect, Prince Charming. I've even heard it said that way.
Mm,
and
mm-hmm.
then
and that guy may have been exactly that. He presented himself as that way.
Absolutely. And then some stressor happens. We know that often about 30% of the time, the first onset of violence is associated with pregnancy. So this person was getting all of her attention, and now there's another being that's getting some of her attention. So he's not quite as happy as he was anymore. Mm-hmm. So the first onset of violence is often associated with pregnancy.
Okay. So how do they know how to get out, or why would people stay in a situation like that? Or how do people get out of a situation when they realize that it's bad?
Well, that's two questions.
Okay, so which one do you want to take first?
I want to talk about why they stay first.
Okay, let's do that.
So there's lots of reasons why folks stay. First of all, you went into this relationship hoping for the best.
Sure.
So the thing that breaks my heart the most is when a patient tells me that they didn't leave him or don't want to leave him because they love him.
Mm-hmm.
They just want their abuser to love them the way they love their abuser.
They want something that they wanted at the beginning, but they're still kind of hopeful that...
Right.
And they probably get a promise from the abuser that it'll never happen again, I promise.
So there's a cycle of violence like that the abuse happens, there's all kinds of promises, offers of dinner, gifts, I'll go to counseling, so on and so forth. And then life kind of equalizes out, the victim's walking on eggshells again, and then there's another explosion of violence, and then there's another promise, I'll be good, and it just goes on and on. The problem is that cycle gets more violent with each go-round.
Okay, now, how does a person get out of the situation?
Can I back up and still talk about why they stay?
Sure, keep going.
So they stay for lots of other reasons as well, things like there are children. We have this belief it's best to have two parents in the household.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's the belief that, well, first of all, they attack the victim's self-image. So the victim may think that she cannot support herself, she's not smart enough to support herself and her kids. So they stay for those reasons. There may be societal implications that they stay or religious reasons that they stay.
Mm-hmm.
It's embarrassing. Who wants to go back to your family and say, this isn't going well?
Mm-hmm.
So there's lots of reasons that people stay and sometimes multiple reasons.
Yeah, I was just going to say it's not necessarily one, but it's, you know.
I could imagine even kind of an extended family. All my brothers and sisters are happily married and I'm the only one. I can't let that happen. I've got to tough this thing out and make it work.
Right.
And then the person also might think that they're the problem, even though they're not the problem, because the person's made them believe that they're the problem and not, you get what I'm saying?
Right. They'll say things like, well, you made me hit you because you didn't have dinner ready when I got home. So they'll minimize their own behavior, and then they'll try to blame the victim for the behavior.
I think at that point, we're going to go ahead and take a quick break, and we'll come back and we'll talk more about domestic violence and how to help people that are maybe in that situation. So stay close.
You're listening to Catholic Radio Indy, converting the culture to Christ through radio, featuring 100% Catholic programming 24/7. Do your friends a favor. Tell them about Catholic Radio Indy.
Alexa, what's the weather forecast for today?
Alexa, what time is the Colts game today?
Alexa, remind me to pick up the dry cleaning tomorrow.
Has Alexa become a part of your daily routine? Then make sure that routine includes Alexa, play Catholic Radio Indy.
Catholic Radio Indy.
Quick, easy access to Catholic programming 24/7. Just say, Alexa, play Catholic Radio Indy.
Catholic Radio Indy.
At Catholic Radio, we love to hear from you. Call us anytime. Just recently, we found this message on our voicemail.
I'm a non-Catholic that listens to your Catholic radio station, and I just wanted to thank you guys. I listen to Catholic Answers and Al Cresta sometimes, and I think her name's Teresa Tommy. I listen to her and another show or two. I appreciate it.
Call us at 317-870-8400 and let us know what you're thinking.
I just called to say, even though I'm not a Catholic, I listen to your station.
You can hear the Holy Mass every day at 8 a.m. right here on Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back to Faith in Action. I'm Bridget Ayer. Jim Ganley's in the studio with me, as well as our guest. We're talking with Caroline Fisher, the Center of Hope with Franciscan Alliance, and it is an organization to help victims of domestic violence and sexual assault, as sexual assault can be a part of domestic violence. Okay, could you recap then, Caroline, what is the Center of Hope?
So we're a team of nurses that provide medical forensic exams to victims of violence. okay. for domestic violence, sexual assault.
So are there signs that people can recognize that that this is going on, whether it's you as the individual, as the victim, or you as a loved one of a potential victim or a loved one of a victim? You get my question?
I do. So a victim of domestic violence is going to have to self-identify that this was violence. And if it feels like violence to you, it probably is.
Is that a hard realization for people to make? I mean, are people in situations for a really long time before they think, well, something's not right? Or do they normally know? Is there like a, you get what I'm asking?
I do. So an abuser is controlling. They can be emotionally abusive. They can be financially abusive before they ever actually lay a hand on a victim.
Okay.
So you want to stand back and think, is this person controlling who I hang out with? Do they limit me with contact with my friends? Are they taking my money? Do they say mean things to me or about me in front of people in public? Those are all signs and symptoms of someone that is potentially walking down that path to become a physically abusive individual. But even that doesn't feel good, right?
Mm-hmm.
So those are all things that people want to watch out for.
Now, in your particular program, the victim is the one that has to approach you. I mean, a person can't call you or contact you and say, gee, my daughter's a victim. I think you need to talk to her. And you reach out. That doesn't work that way?
Not typically. Typically, we respond to folks that come into the hospital, usually the emergency department. But we go to the floors, too, when a nurse on the floor identifies a need.
Oh, sure.
So if you are a family member and you think, or talk about, you mentioned a little bit about the signs, would those be the same signs for a loved one? Like, let's just say I had someone I knew that was in a relationship where I felt like the person that they were with was abusive. What would I be looking for?
Well, certainly that distancing of the victim from her support system.
Okay.
Because an abuser doesn't want anybody to say bad things about him.
Mm-hmm.
Controlling behavior. You may see bruises, other kinds of injuries. The patient may talk about, you know, he choked me. That's one of my biggest concerns in the world, is that people get strangled, victims call it being choked, and they don't report it because it doesn't leave any marks. Well, there's still internal damage that can be going on inside the neck when someone puts their hands around your neck.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you hear somebody say they were choked, that's pretty scary to me.
Mm-hmm.
What other kinds of controlling behaviors do you see this person, you know, putting on to your loved one?
Mm-hmm.
Are they telling her what to wear, mm-hmm. taking her money, where she can go? Are they not showing up to family functions, or are they there for 5 minutes and then he wants to leave?
Mm.
You know, do they not incorporate?
Now, this program all takes place at St. Francis or Franciscan Health on the south side of Indianapolis?
Yes, but we also go to Mooresville and see patients there as well.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask you about. Somebody who might not live on the south side still can present themselves there and get some help?
Oh, absolutely.
So what is the process? Let me ask you this. How does a person leave then?
So we ask the patient if they want to contact law enforcement, and if they do, we do that, help facilitate that for them. We also work with advocacy agencies, and between us and the advocate, we can help find shelter for them if they want to leave. People get really frustrated, though, with my patients because they don't want to leave right now when I tell them. And consider, they may have a purse on them, and we're asking them to walk out of a situation mm-hmm. with nothing. And they may have things back at the house they want, need. So we think that victims have to be told there are services and offered those services about 7 times before they actually can work up the energy to really leave that situation. So sometimes my plans with patients are, okay, you're going to go home, you're going to get X, Y, and Z, and you're going to wait till he goes to work, and then you're going to leave. That's a legitimate thing. We have to trust our patients know their scenario better than I know it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell them what to do, otherwise I'm being controlling too.
Mm-hmm. So how can you help someone that is in this situation? If you recognize, let's say you are a loved one and you do recognize this, should you get involved? What should you do? How do you approach the subject? Any advice or tips?
I absolutely have advice and tips. So first of all, regardless of whether or not it's a family member you're worried about.
Yeah, it could be someone else, just someone that you see at work.
Right.
Or it could be other, you know, interactions.
Just saying, for example, I see, you know, bruising around on your arm and I'm worried about that. You want to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then leave it, because you can't force anybody, or then two, you're being in control, right?
So opening up the conversation, like, I noticed this, is anything going on, or what happened, you know?
Absolutely. But one of the things I see happen is, remember those seven times I mentioned, and people get frustrated that she doesn't just walk away right now.
Mm-hmm.
We have to be patient. We have to be there for that patient, or for that victim. We can't wash our hands after the fifth time we've said something to them. And that's hard.
So realize it's going to take at least seven times, and maybe more.
Now, do sometimes the couples or the people involved get back together? I mean, they're at a situation where one is abusing the other, and probably the logical thing to do is separate at that point. But is it common for them to, at some point, decide they really do love each other, they really do want to get back together, or does that not work very often?
One of the things I've learned in life is never say never.
Mm-hmm.
But there are batterers intervention programs. This is not an anger management issue.
Mm-hmm. What is it?
It's a battering issue.
Okay.
Okay, it's being an abuser.
Mm.
So sending someone to anger management is not the answer. Someone has to go to a batterer's intervention program and really work the program, do the work that's required to succeed. So can it happen? Does it happen? Yeah. But it takes both people wanting to participate in that, not just one.
Now, do you get involved then in referring, if one of the partners in this situation wants to at least try to change, do you offer like a referring to them if they, or is that like a separate thing?
It's,
you get
kind
what
of
I'm
a
saying?
Separate thing. I don't really work with the batterers themselves. That's not usually what's going on as I'm working with the patients. And often that is mandated by the courts.
Okay.
Something that I find incredibly frustrating, though, is when they mandate anger management instead of the appropriate treatment.
Gotcha.
It's like sending somebody with diabetes to a podiatrist, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're still a doctor, but not really going to treat the right thing.
But I think knowing that there is, you know, some kind of a battery, as you were saying, treatment that for those people who are in that cycle of being an abuser, there is treatment for that too.
And there's treatment for the victim.
Mm-hmm.
And more importantly, we know that a child that is raised in domestic violence is three times more likely to become a batterer or involved in a violent relationship as well.
Mm-hmm.
So not only is there counseling that's oftentimes free for the victim, but there's also counseling available for the kids.
Mm.
And that is hugely important.
Are there typically a lot of children involved in this then, in these situations?
Yes.
Okay, so probably what, 90%? Or
I don't know that I can really put a number to
but
that.
But a high number?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Now, talk a little bit more about the Center of Hope. Do you have any needs, financial or volunteers? I mean, can people, you know, get involved with the center? Is that an option?
I do have a couple people that volunteer. I would tell you, if you ask what my needs were, I'm always looking for clothing and toiletries for our victims. So I have an agency that donates clothing and toiletries for our sexual assault victims.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm telling a woman she needs to leave her house right now,
right,
she may not have shampoo and toothpaste and clean panties and all those things that we think are stuff we need every day. So that's the kind of needs that I would have.
So if someone wanted to donate those items, how would they do that?
They could just call me at my office number and we could have a conversation.
Do you have a web page that you could offer?
Franciscan Alliance has a web page that there's a page for Center of Hope on there.
And I will actually put the link to that on the podcast of this show, so you can go look that up and I'm sure you can Google it. Well, what have you learned over these years of, I guess, putting your faith in action? What's it been like? What have you learned?
golly, I may tear up over this. These women and men are amazingly strong, resilient people, and taking care of them is a gift.
Well, and I'm sure you're a gift to them as well. So people, if you want to learn more about this topic, you can go to Franciscan Alliance, right?
Yes.
And look up the Center for Hope webpage, and you can get all the information there. So again, if someone's in this situation, a couple closing tips for them.
So here in Central Indiana, we have the Julian Center.
Okay.
We have the Salvation Army. They have a shelter there. And we have a shelter called Holy Families.
Okay.
So there's three opportunities in Central Indiana, or, you know, in the Central Indiana area. And then broader, in Madison County, there's an agency there. And in Hendricks County, there's an agency. And in Columbus. So we have a lot of agencies. What we don't have is enough beds for people.
Wow.
It's a constant need to have enough beds.
Now so should someone wait until they're physically injured to actually present themselves at the emergency room to take advantage of your services?
Yes and no. So showing up to the emergency department is a whole billing insurance thing, right?
Yes, right.
But they could call me at 317-528-5440. And we could have a conversation about what their next steps are without them actually being physically hurt.
Well, that's a great point, Jim, that you bring up, that you don't necessarily have to get to the physical abuse point. You might just recognize that something's not right here and I need to get out and I need help. And then go ahead and give that number again.
317-528-5440.
So call Caroline and she will help you. She will help you out, right?
Right. So that's not a number that I answer 24/7, but if you leave me a safe number to call back, I will call back and we'll figure out a plan.
All right. So Carolyn Fisher, Center of Hope, Franciscan Alliance, thanks so much for being our guest today. And thanks so much for your work to help those who are in the situation of domestic violence.
Thank you for having us.
God bless.
You have been listening to Faith in Action, the program that looks at how people put their faith into action in their everyday lives. Faith in Action is a presentation of Catholic Radio Indy. You can hear this episode of Faith in Action again or any past episode at CatholicRadioIndy.org. If you have a suggestion for a guest or topic for a future program, please call us at 317-870-8400. Or email Jim at CatholicRadioIndy.org.